touch the microphone, so, you know. Okay, all right, I'm ready. So first of all, big kudos to the choir. You know, they had the idea to do a virtual choir, and they did it. And I know that it wasn't easy because I was part of it. And just special thanks to Mary Kerrigan and David Kerrigan, who put so much effort into making it happen, and John Johnson, who was the mixer for the sound and put it all together, and then our wonderful brother Chris Kimbler, who provided such a nice, strong, and steady piano accompaniment that it made it much easier to record had he not been there. And just to all of the singers, especially my sister altos, who were just so wonderful. No offense to the sopranos or the men, but I just am very connected to my sisters, the altos. So, I wore this outfit today for all of you. A few wardrobe malfunctions. I tried some new eye makeup. I feel like my eyes look a little bit like RuPaul. Once I got it on, I couldn't get it off. So there you go, there's that. And these may or may not be pajama bottoms. But I figured when in Rome, you know, I think probably a lot of you folks at home are wearing your pajamas as well, so I thought I would wear them. But the main reason I wore them is that because they're on my palette to go with my new sweatshirt, which is, it says Captain Thundershirt on it. And Jennifer, I really hope you're not zooming in too far, okay? All right, for the sake of modesty, please let's not get such an extreme close-up. So, Captain Thundershirt. And some of you may be wondering why I have a shirt that says Captain Thundershirt with a Vizsla head on it. Vizsla is a kind of dog that I have. And it happened, I started doing this thing that I call thundershirting a while ago. And actually for years. And Nemo Patel, when he came to visit and we did an interview with him, he asked me what's one of my spiritual techniques, and I said, thundershirting, but don't tell anybody. I said this in front of like the whole congregation. And then one of our congregants, Scott Coppersmith, said that he feels that I'm one of his superheroes, and he wanted to make me a t-shirt that said Captain Thundershirt as my superhero name. Now, Scott got busy designing something that will sterilize UV masks and gloves and keys and cell phones. So clearly his priorities went elsewhere, perhaps to something more important. So I contacted my friend and our practitioner, Amy Michelson, who is a well-known wedding dress designer, and she created this shirt for me. So now I have an Amy Michelson original, and I'm very proud to wear it. Now, you might be wondering, why thundershirt? What is thundershirting? Well, first of all, you may not, if you're not around dogs a lot, you may not know what a thundershirt is. And a thundershirt is actually a garment for a dog or a cat. And it's a tight garment that's usually, it's often gray, but there are other colors too, that you wrap around the animal when scary things are happening. Things like fireworks or thunderstorms or other loud noises. I have to say that my dog Bartok has one, and he doesn't really like it because he's afraid of the thundershirt, as well as being afraid of fireworks and whatnot. But for many dogs, it works really well. It's very similar to the principle of swaddling a baby. And also, if any of you have one of those weighted blankets that you can sleep under that give you a really deep sleep, I love my weighted blanket. I can hardly lift it, but I love it. And it's the same type of thing. It presses on your body, on your nervous system, to help calm you down. So that's what a thundershirt does. That's what a swaddle does. That's what a weighted blanket does. And the way that I thundershirt the congregation is that I absolutely hold the spiritual truth around people and absolutely know that that truth is true for them. And it's not my truth, it's the spiritual truth that God is all there is and that God is absolute and that there is a solution for your problem and that love will always triumph. Our practitioners know this. We have the most amazing group of practitioners. They are wonderful, they are joyful, they are witty, they are sensitive, they are kind. We're about to get three more. Christine, Kathy, and Gail are doing their exam this week, and they have their primary role as practitioners is to what we call know the truth for the congregation. They pray for the congregation, but they know the truth, and they know the truth of the highest and best order for all things. Knowing, as I said before, that God is all there is, that we are one with God, that life is perfect, even though it doesn't appear perfect, and that life is unfolding perfectly, and that the life of God, that perfect life of God, is our life right now, and that within that context, within that beautiful life of God, Love will always triumph because love is the superior power of the universe, and that all things are possible in that love. So that's what thundershirting is. I may refer to it as thundershirting, but if that word doesn't make sense to you as it does to me, I like it because it has a physical component to it. Just think of knowing the truth, or swaddling, or wrapping yourself in a warm blanket of love. The thing about fear, because fear is the opposite of love, is that fear has a muscle memory. Not only a brain memory, but a muscle memory. You know, I used to work with a woman that interpreted my dreams, and she would always, I would go to her several times a week because I was having lots of dreams at that time, and she would always say, you know, trauma, it's in your cells, it's in your cells, it's in your cells, you got to get it out of your cells. And I think most people who work in trauma know that trauma does lodge in the body, and that you can feel it even when nothing traumatic is happening, or you can feel it in the face of a perceived trauma. It's similar, not that riding a bicycle is traumatic for most people, but the idea of it's just like riding a bicycle, we've probably all heard that phrase, because your muscles know how to ride a bicycle even if you haven't rode one for 20 years. You just get on it and your muscles remember. I was struck by how subtle this muscle memory is too, you know, and how it doesn't take much to activate muscle memory. Earlier in the pandemic, when we were kind of at the height of contagion, I worked in one of the homeless shelters that was called a sick shelter, and it was for people that had been exposed. So we were very cautious about protecting ourselves and about protecting the residents at the homeless shelter. And so I put on my gloves and my mask, and as soon as I touched something, I recognized that my gloves were contaminated. And then for 4 hours afterwards, I wouldn't touch my clothes, and I kept my hands above my elbows. Why? Because 40 years ago, I did a rotation in nursing school where I scrubbed in at the OR every day. And when you scrub in an OR, once your hands are clean or once your hands are contaminated, you can't touch anything. And you also have to keep your hands above your elbows so nothing drips down onto your hands. So that muscle memory was so vivid to me that I truly walked around for 4 hours with my hands like this, not touching my clothes, trying not to touch anything unless I had to, and knowing that if I did, that I would contaminate something with my already contaminated gloves. I just felt it in my body, and I could not even force myself to touch my clothes. So that's muscle memory in the body, which is very real, very real. But there's also memory in the brain. Memory in the neural pathways in the brain, and things that might not necessarily seem like they're going on, things that might not necessarily seem that they have traumatized us or caused fear to rise up, they're in there as well, and they also are extremely subtle. I had an experience of this the other day. You know, like when you're afraid, sometimes you try and control everything, right? Anybody? Show of pinkies, perhaps? And I was talking with my prayer partner, and my prayer partner's name is Mark. He's another minister, and he's one of my best friends. And we've been prayer partners for 12 years or so. We call each other just about every week, unless one of us is traveling. And I called him up, and actually life is pretty good right now. But I did mention to him that thing that maybe some of us are experiencing. I spoke about it in church a couple of weeks ago about how some of us feel like we may be turning into our dog, you know, like going around the house all day, roaming around looking for food, right? Eating perhaps a tad too much from time to time. And so I said to Mark, you know, I guess, you know, really the only prayer I need is for my health and for my well-being, just that I could, I'm not being horrible, but just so that I could like tone down the eating a little bit. By the way, I think maybe the three new practitioner students should leave the room at this part. You can visualize them all leaving the room, or if you want, you can visualize them all turning up the volume. Like, what's she going to say now? Because what I said was, I said, Mark, I really need prayers for you know, helping me be a little more disciplined in my eating. But, oh, Mark, could you make the prayer not kick in until Monday, because I really want to pig out this weekend. So, that's an element of fear and control and not allowing God to be God or love to be love. And that kind of thing shows up in our lives, in our bodies, in our brains, in our hearts, in our beings all of the time. It shows up as when we think there's no solution to something. We've only done it this way. We know that some people have done it this way. There's absolutely no other way to do it. It shows up when we have a polarizing argument, whether it's with a family member or a friend, or whether it's between two political systems. Your way is wrong, my way is right, or vice versa. There's absolutely no, perhaps, third way that is trying to emerge from the argument. It shows up when we deny possibility. It shows up when we are in fear, thinking that there is no solution. When truthfully, in this teaching, we teach that if a problem occurs, the solution is already present in divine mind. So that's why I call forth the energy of thundershirting, of holding the truth in a very assertive manner, whether you want to hear it or not, just holding that truth in an assertive manner. Now, for other people, you can do it silently. You can do it silently, or you can do what I call stealth prayer, which is encouragement. When I used to work in a corporate environment, of course, we were not allowed to pray with our employees, and somebody would come to me, and I did a training course that they had to pass before they were hired, and sometimes they would say, you know, I'm failing this. I just don't think I could do that. And my stealth prayer would say, you know what? I know that there is something bigger within you that absolutely knows that you can do that. That's thundershirting. That's knowing the truth, because I do know that there is something bigger within us that can do what we need to do if we give the grace, the permission to shine through and to guide us. And telling the prayer to kick in on a certain day, or telling the universe what it needs to look like, actually limits the law of cause and effect that we talk about. It's a much greater truth to surrender when we offer a prayer to the divine and say, change me into someone that can see possibilities. I don't know anything beyond what I already know, so change me into someone that can see a greater possibility. Or change me into someone that doesn't polarize these arguments, but that can see that there is perhaps a third way that is trying to emerge that I just don't know about because I'm not experienced in this language. In this language of listening to others and hearing what they have to say and then speaking my truth without blame or judgment. Help me to be that kind of person that can bring forth that third way. And help me to be that person that moves beyond fear into greater love in all things and that knows the possibility of love, the possibility of greatness, the possibility of wholeness in everything. That's the kind of person we pray to be. And then we have to let go and allow it to happen without trying to get in there and be all impatient. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love seeks not its own way, which really upsets me because I really want my own way all the time. But love seeks not its own way. It does the will of the divine. It does the will of love. So I think that this issue of trust and surrender and applying spiritual truth in an assertive, firm manner, and being able to see beyond the appearances and know the truth so solidly, I think that this has been called to task during the pandemic. You know, certainly when we were all isolating and we were afraid that our loved ones and that we were going to get sick and we were afraid for the world and afraid for what this might mean for society, certainly a lot of us were saying, no, 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 I'm going to trust in something bigger. I'm going to trust that all is well. And as the state of California and other places in the United States and the world are contemplating reopening, I see this as a time where we have to, again, recommit to applying a rigorous standard of principle, a rigorous holding of the highest truth for all things, a truth that blesses all beings, that blesses us, and that ultimately blesses the world. I'll tell you a little bit about what I mean by that. So obviously everybody watching on Facebook is part of the Facebook live stream and is on our Facebook page, and some of you may know that there was a big Facebook fight on our group page the other day, which was super fun, actually. I didn't get to read the whole thing, and I usually stay out of that sort of dualistic thing of people fighting back and forth on Facebook. But this one actually felt very relevant and felt like it might kind of inform me as to what people were thinking. And what happened was that somebody posted a post that said, 500 churches in the state of California are going to reopen on March 31st, no matter what. And most of them were mega churches, big churches, where there would be a lot of people. And again, I don't know what's in the hearts of these people. I don't know what their plans for social distancing are, but it seems that the state of California at this point is wanting churches and other large groups to kind of stay closed down for a little bit longer. And so the person put this post out there and he said, what is this church going to do? And there was a lot of, you know, I think a lot of people don't really like church, you know, they don't like churches, because we have a lot of people in our group. A lot of people were saying negative things about the church, about our church and churches in general. One of my favorites was that, all in caps, you know, churches, the pastor just takes all the money. Now, not only did I miss the day in ministerial school where they said, how do you handle a pandemic? I also missed the class about abusing congregational money, oddly. But it was so sweet because people that I know from our church, our center, I think I can say their names because they said it on Facebook. It was Lacey and Sue, and I saw Chris Howe on there. And if I'm leaving out your name, I'm sorry, I just didn't, like I said, I didn't get to read the whole thing because they were in the process of taking it down while I was reading it. But they were defending me, defending the church, saying our church has integrity with money, our church is transparent. I was talking to Annette about that afterwards, and it's like, wow, they seem to really know that. Do you think it's because they've been to my house and they see the way that I live? Because I am not living an elegant lifestyle at all. And it has to do with, you know, 30 animals running around my house, but that's another story. But it was, you know, it was just so interesting to see the misperception that I'm right about pastors, and then this other group was trying to provide a gentler approach. And somebody else said, you know, I think that our church is going to follow the guidelines by the state of California, which we are. You know? And, you know, as I'm saying this, I know it's a heated issue about reopening or whether or not to stay at home and whether or not to wear masks and all that stuff. I have a bias. I have a medical bias because of my work as a nurse. So I acknowledge that. And I also can't judge others, other places that are thinking of reopening. I know that the pressure, the economic pressure on certain people is horrible. I am not living from paycheck to paycheck at this point in my life. I don't think my employees are either, our employees are either. So I try just to stay out of all of that judgment. The only thing I can really speak to is what we are doing in this church. And we are taking it slow. We're taking it slow and we're following the guidelines from the governor. And, you know, just, we don't know what that's going to look like, but that's okay. That's all right. Because that, if we are going to thundershirt that Mamma Mia, if we are going to thundershirt the not knowing and apply spiritual principle, it could be something different. It's not uncertainty. It is opportunity. It is a great and beautiful way to open our hearts to the greater yet to be. That thing that I've been saying for weeks now, that we do not have to resume the status quo. We can be the place where 10,000 flowers grow. And if we jump in and start doing everything like we've always done it, if we jump in just because we're scared, if we jump in just because all the other churches are opening up when it's not really time yet for us to open up, then we will miss that opportunity to grow our 10,000 flowers. And that's what I want for us. And you know, the churches that are opening, they have biblical citations as to why they should open, but I got a biblical citation for you all. And that is, well, let's see if I can remember it. Too bad David Carrigan's not here. Everybody visualize David Carrigan yelling at the camera, telling me that I'm misquoting something. He doesn't really yell. He's very polite. But anyway, love is strong as death. And what that means to me, it's from the Song of Solomon. It's from the Song of Solomon. And I've been saying all along, love is stronger than pandemic. Love is stronger than isolation. Love is stronger than quarantine. Community is stronger than pandemic or isolation or quarantine. And community is love. Community is love. This community is love. Oh my gosh, this community is amazing. Love is strong as death, from the Song of Solomon. And the whole quote, the part of the whole quote, I won't say the whole thing. I know it from an opera piece, so I may be misquoting slightly David, but it goes, Set me as a seal upon your arm. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a thunder shirt upon your arm, just like it says in the Bible, a thunder shirt upon your arm. For love is strong as death. And I see that, I feel it. I'm getting chills talking about it. I feel that wrapping ourselves in truth and knowing that there are greater possibilities for this center if we continue to apply the rigorous holding of principle up against the light of despair and up against the light of fear. Certainly, I have found that our congregation is well equipped to do this. You know, I've been asking on Facebook a question every week, and this week's question was, I better get it so I don't misquote it. As we contemplate reopening, what values do you hold? And this means reopening the church, or reopening your lives, or reopening the country or the state. Tobias wrote, he holds the value of magical connections, always discovering silver linings. Amy, allowing the beauty and wisdom of nature to be her guide. Nancy, the value of truth, even though we don't always know what truth is, just wanting to know the value of truth, the value of wanting to know the truth is enough. Chris holds magical serendipity that happens when we love one another. Dina, honoring all living things, treading more lightly in appreciation for all that we are and all that we have. Jan holds our center, VCSL, and all of the loving, kind people she has met here. Melissa holds the value of loving each other through safe connections. Shelley, safety for all, the value of science, experts, truth, and laughter, appropriate and inappropriate, she says. Annette holds kindness, and she spelled it out, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, respect, okay? Jan, each person's right to choose and allowing differences. Deanna, honoring work-life balance, commitment to doing good on this planet, choosing love. Christine, trusting God in all things. Gia, kindness and a peaceful heart. Joanne, loving living beings over profits. Doreen, deeper awareness of trust. Karen, compassion and caring for each other's well-being. Catherine, resting in the infinite in which every good is and always exists. The infinite and the mustard seed are one. Vicky, trusting in love that lights the way for the highest good. Dave holds alignment with the absolute. Kathy, compassion, trust, faith, kindness, respect. John holds holding his tongue, unlike certain canines, he says. I can relate. Patty, holding the value of community, friendship, and love. Susie and Steve, they hold the values of health and respect for others. Linda, love and appreciation of family, faith, and friends. Keith holds loving memory of what was, knowing what is, and looking to what will be again. Patty holds the values of intelligence, patience, love, kindness. Karen holds everything that she has learned in quarantine and takes nothing for granted, especially hugs. Bernie holds compassion, respect, and kindness. Deborah holds the value of relationships and a big heartfelt hug. Randy holds sanity, compassion, intelligence, and acceptance. Susan, the love and strength that binds our community. Gail, love, respect, understanding, and acceptance of what is and what is important to me. Jennifer, discerning the most compassionate choice. Cheryl, respect, compassion, acceptance, and an open heart. Beverly, trust in the loving wisdom of God or Goddess and all that is. Michelle, appreciation for all beings in nature. And Barb. Barb says that she values every opportunity she has been given to experience the beauty, love, and awakening of her spirit on her journey of growth. Okay, so you take a look at that stuff. You take a look at all of those values that our beautiful congregation has, and they just humble me. You know, you all just humble me with what you write down and how much you know. And I guess the only thing now is to, like, do it, right? To hold these values firmly, to thundershirt the world, to thundershirt this church, to thundershirt one another, to thundershirt ourselves, to hold on to this beautiful, beautiful truth that we know so deeply. And the most important thing, oh my goodness, If I could get a tattoo, I would have this tattoo emblazoned somewhere on possibly other people so I could see it all the time. But emblazoned that says, do the right thing even when you don't feel like doing the right thing. Hold the principle even when you don't feel like holding the principle. Hold the principle even when there is so much evidence against what you think is supposed to be happening or what the principle is saying is supposed to be happening. Just continue to hold that faith. And we hold that faith lightly, knowing that as we hold the faith and leave enough room for spirit, then that's when miracles can happen. Because, again, our muscle memory in our cells and in our brain moves very quickly to this is the way it has to be, either or, and there's no possible way that this can happen. And that's not true. I'm going to give you a little object lesson to prove how I believe that this is not true. Good, I've got time. Okay, so some of you may have seen this before. Let me get my stuff here. I need my little objects. Okay. Uh-oh. Okay, so perhaps some of you in camp or in youth church or whatever have played with this exercise of, Reverend Bonnie, here's a piece of paper for you. You need to cut a hole in it that is big enough for your whole body to fit through it. Okay? Now, this is a metaphor for reality, because I would look at this piece of paper and I'd say, no way. Not only am I turning into my dog and eating everything in sight, there's just no way I could fit through this. The paper is too small. I'm criticizing what is. I'm criticizing reality. Or I need to somehow make myself smaller so it will fit. However, what if there is a way to cut a hole in this paper that I can actually fit through it? What we do is we apply spiritual pressure to it. We fold it in half and make a nice firm crease. And I have an extra with me just in case I mess this up. And then we ask for the holy scissors, the holy sacred, non-contaminated scissors to come in. Let's all give a big round of applause for Chris. That was like his favorite part of the service. Okay. And then we make some cuts, some strategic cuts in the paper. And as we cut, we apply the pressure of steel, knowing that God is all there is. And we apply the pressure of the truth, that knowing that we are one with God. And we apply the pressure of knowing that love is all there is. And we apply the knowing that we are one with love. And then we apply the knowing that there is a good for us and we ought to have it. And then we apply the pressure of the knowing that life is perfect, even when we can't see it. And then we apply the pressure of the receipt of infinite possibilities. And then we apply the pressure of the need of us getting out of our own way. And then we apply a little more pressure to trust that God's goodness prevails. And then we apply one more little pressure, I think, to say, thank you, God. Thank you so much for this. And then we do some more thunder shirting, more swaddling with this piece of paper. I have to go over here, it won't work. Then we, come on, talk amongst yourselves, okay. Then we start to release all expectation of what it needs to look like. And we start to engage the spiritual law that says all things are possible as we change our consciousness, change our lives. And then we start to, again, give thanks for the mystery that says yes. And then we release again, just in case we didn't really release the first time, so the prayer doesn't get stuck. And then we surrender it completely to God by releasing one more time. And then, when we're done, we see that truly all things are possible. And we have a paper that I can fit through easily. Cut a hole in a paper that I... You're welcome. Thank you. Okay, so I'm no Mr. Bill. That would have been really good for youth and family, right? Right, Jennifer? Yeah. However, you get the point? When I first saw that done, I looked at the paper, I'm like, there's no way that's possible. But there is. We just don't know the tools. And if we stay open, if we apply the tools, then we will be honored We will give permission for those tools to come to us, and the grace of Spirit will be upon us, and we'll be rich in wisdom and strong in spirit, and love will prevail. Love will triumph as it wants to do. Love always wants to triumph because, again, love is stronger than death. Love is stronger than quarantine. Love is stronger than pandemic. Love is stronger than fear. At the end of the talks, I've been saying a few words about how I see these qualities demonstrated in our community. One of the most beautiful things I've done this week, and it's I can't talk about who because it's all confidential, but I did speak with some people that were in distress, and I got to thundershirt with them and hold the truth really firmly for them and perhaps see that their hearts opened up just a little bit to know a bigger reality for themselves. So together, without naming names, let's just know that anybody in our community or anybody in our world that is experiencing any type of distress, whether it's from this pandemic or whether it's from something else, that there is a higher truth for them, and we firmly apply that to our knowing of their lives. And then the other thing that I got to experience here in terms of the pandemic and how we're seeing new possibilities, how we're cutting a hole in a paper when we didn't think a hole in a paper could be cut, was certainly the relationship that I've had with the choir this week. The choir who worked so hard to create these recordings. The choir who perhaps at times didn't think it could be done. I know that, you know, I've had a lot of experience singing, but making a recording of yourself is quite different. It's quite unforgiving, and it's very, very different than singing with a choir. My experience was almost apocalyptic. I felt that, well, first of all, I broke the microphone, and then pretty much every dog in the neighborhood started howling while I was singing, and then I think I might have raised the dead, because the cat brought in a dead mouse while I was singing, and I couldn't stop because I was recording, and I looked down, and I think it had moved. I think my voice raised the dead. But you know what? We all did it anyway. We all put aside our comfort. We all took a huge ego flogging to do it. I don't know that I know that I'm not the only one who felt this way, because a lot of my alto sisters were writing to me and saying, "Oh, it's too hard." I was calling myself Miss Picky Pants and telling my husband he couldn't listen to me because I sounded like Edith Bunker. But enough about me. The choir came through, even though it was difficult, even though it was hard, with strong leadership from all the people that I mentioned before, Chris and David and Mary and John doing the recording and the mixing, and Kenny making it sound good on the speakers, and just all of that coming together, just knowing a bigger possibility. Now that is thundershirting, and that is what we do here. That is holding a higher spiritual truth despite the little voices, the little muscle memories and brain memories that say it can't be done and you can't do it. So I'm going to end with a quote from the Mirabai Star book. Where is it? I think I'm going to end with a quote from Mirabai Star. Ha, here it is. So this is about the goddess that Hugh wrote about in the reading, or read about in the reading, and it's just a repeat of the end of the reading, but it seems so relevant for what we're talking about. Tara, who's the bodhisattva of compassion, Tara helps us to remember we are not on our own. There are countless beings hearing the call, extending their hands, blessing and strengthening us to step up. We cannot and should not transmute the toxins of the prevailing paradigm inside the cells of our own individual bodies. The alchemy happens in a circle. We need to weave together our threads of care and transfigure this tapestry. It is only together that we can reimagine the territorial treaty we've inherited as a generous invitation to a communal feast for our center, which will be better and either bigger or smaller, it doesn't matter, either richer or poorer, but more loving and deeper and kinder because of this pandemic, not in spite of it. All constraints are opportunities for creativity. All pandemics are opportunities for praise. All of this is to get us to go deeper into our spiritual knowing and apply that truth. And then going back to the reading, it says, look around here, look around on Facebook, look around in this beautiful community. Your allies are everywhere, and they love you. I love you. Let us pray.